Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Thursday, October 9th, 2025. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Lisa Cantergany, and today our front page articles include Judge Orders New Trial of NAH Lawsuit, Report of Student with Handgun Prompts Arrest, and Owners Bring Chocolate Business Home. And we're going to start with this article. Its full title is Gun in Backpack Prompts Arrest of Summit High School Student. And this is written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff reporter. A Summit High School student was arrested on Friday, October 3rd, after bringing a loaded handgun to campus, the Flagstaff Police Department confirmed Monday. The school was under a shelter-in-place order Friday afternoon. By 4:30 p.m., school administrators had notified families of the incident and the arrest. We are grateful for the reports which allowed this threat to be investigated immediately, Summit Principal Rochelle Bronson and Flagstaff's Unified School District Superintendent Michael Penka stated in an email. This is another reminder that we all must remain vigilant and continue to support one another to keep everyone safe in our schools. According to the police department, an officer responded to the school around noon after a report of a possible firearm. FUSD and the police department have not disclosed how others on campus became aware of the firearm. The responding officer learned that the firearm was concealed in a backpack, and that the student in question had left the campus heading for the Flagstaff Mall. Police located the student at the mall. The suspect attempted to flee, leading to what police characterized as a brief foot pursuit. During that pursuit, the suspect discarded what appeared to be a handgun into nearby bushes. The suspect was arrested shortly thereafter. The discarded item was retrieved and confirmed to be a loaded 9mm handgun. Because the suspect is a minor, their name has not been publicly released. They were transported to the Coconino County Juvenile Detention Facility on weapons-related charges. Bronson and Penka, in their email to students, stated that the district would investigate the incident in cooperation with the police department. We recognize this threat, and any occurrence of school violence in our nation can be traumatic for students, families, and staff, they added. There have been multiple reports of weapons on school campuses in Flagstaff since the beginning of this school year, though two of those ultimately proved to be unfounded. On August 25th, the first day of the fall college semester, Northern Arizona University received a report of a person with a rifle inside the Klein Library. The library was evacuated and closed for approximately 2 hours until a team of law enforcement officers from multiple agencies cleared the building. Similarly, on September 2nd, Flagstaff Police responded to Flagstaff High School after a report of a possible firearm on campus. The campus was briefly placed on lockdown until officers determined no weapon was present. In late August, Flagstaff Mayor Becky Daggett and FPD Chief Sean Connolly released a video announcing the city's Safe Guns, Safe Homes, and Cars campaign, meant to promote responsible storage of firearms. Our goal is simple: to ensure every firearm in Flagstaff is stored securely, out of reach of those who shouldn't have access, Daggett said in that video. Research published by the American Medical Association found that approximately 60% of firearms used in school shootings between 1990 and 2016 were obtained from a family member, friend, or acquaintance of the shooter. The origin of the handgun brought to Summit's campus on Friday is not yet known. Additionally, access to an unsecured firearm significantly elevates the risk of adolescent suicide, one of the leading causes of death for teens in the United States. The Flagstaff Police Department recommends storing firearms unloaded, locked, and separate from ammunition. The city's safety campaign is modeled on the Be Smart program developed by Everytown for Gun Safety Support Fund. Additional information is available at besmartforkids.org. And that article was called Gun in Backpack Prompts Arrest of Summit High School Student, and it was written by Sam McLaughlin, Stun staff reporter. Our next front page story today is titled Judge Orders New Trial of NAH Lawsuit. This is also written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. When a federal jury returned a decision in favor of Amethyst Deasy in a harassment lawsuit against Northern Arizona Healthcare, NAH, on May 29th, it looked like the three-year-old case brought by the former nurse might finally have reached its conclusion. But nearly 4 months later, the judge overseeing the case issued an order, based in part on a defense motion filed just hours before the end of the trial, setting aside the jury's verdict and ordering a new trial on the grounds that new allegations introduced by Deasy during her testimony created a fundamental unfairness on defendant at trial. In the 18-page ruling, Judge John J. Tucci of the U.S. District Court for the District of Arizona struck a notably critical tone, describing the actions of Deasy and her attorneys. Tucci characterized their strategy as ambushing and wrote that they had sandbagged the defendants in a manner antithetical to trial practice. He also called their last briefing aggressively unhelpful and potentially misleading. Despite these admonishments, Tucci did not fully grant the final motion by NAH, which effectively sought to preclude a jury decision entirely. Instead, he ordered both parties in the case to attend a December 2nd pretrial conference in preparation for a do-over. The new trial, however, will likely not take place until sometime in 2026. Deasy was formerly a nurse at Flagstaff Medical Center from 2013 to 2020. She is married to former Flagstaff Mayor Paul Deasy, who held that role from 2020 to 2022. She ran for a seat on Flagstaff City Council herself in the November 2024 general election. Finishing fifth out of six candidates in that race, with approximately 14% of votes cast. Her lawsuit against NAH, originally filed in April 2022, alleged that the company created a hostile work environment by failing to address sexual harassment by her coworker, Nicholas Landry, between 2017 and 2019, and that the company retaliated against her for making complaints about Landry. DC has been represented by the Phoenix law firm Hauck Employment Attorneys through all of the proceedings. Although his name appears throughout the court filings and his alleged conduct is at the heart of the case, Landry was never named as a party to the suit. NAH is the sole defendant. Many of the original allegations, including the retaliation claim, were dismissed by the judge prior to the jury trial in May of this year. The trial was thus supposed to address only the claim that DZ's supervisors at NAH failed to reasonably address or remedy conduct that had been reported to them, including sexual comments, a derogatory and unwelcome nickname, and criticism of DZ's knowledge and skills. However, during her testimony in court, she made new statements about Landry's alleged conduct. The volume, the specificity, and the graphic detail of the new allegations dwarf those of the previous disclosed allegations, Tucci wrote, and likely loomed large in the jurors' minds. The new allegations, Tucci stated, were never reported to defendant in the course of plaintiff's communications with management or human resources during or after her employment with defendant, did not appear in her Equal Employment Opportunity Commission complaint, were not alleged in the civil complaint in this matter, were not disclosed in written discovery, were not mentioned in plaintiff's deposition, and therefore were unknown to defendant or its counsel until plaintiff took the stand on the first day of trial. Contrary to how court proceedings are sometimes portrayed in popular media, the practice of trial by ambush through the use of surprise testimony or evidence is generally prohibited, or at the very least restricted, in most jurisdictions. By withholding new and relevant information until the trial, Tucci wrote, DZ's legal team denied NAH any opportunity to prepare to meet the allegations in its defense. Attorneys for NAH from the Phoenix firm Ogletree Deacons filed a motion on the morning of May 29th, the final day of the trial, asking for the judge to rule in favor of the defense via an unusual procedure, judgment as a matter of law, or a determination that no reasonable jury could find the evidence in the case sufficient to support the plaintiff's conclusion. Also known as a Rule 50 motion, a request for judgment as a matter of law, seeks the decisive intervention of the judge before a jury can render its verdict. There simply would be no reasonable basis for the jury to conclude that NAH knew or should have known of the above-mentioned newly disclosed allegations, the filing argued. Tucci gave Deasy until June 2nd to respond to the motion. This created a significant possibility that the jury could return a verdict before the court could decide defendant's Rule 50 motion, he noted in his later order. That is, in fact, what happened. The jury's verdict on May 29th awarded Deasy $125,000 in compensatory damages, but the pending Rule 50 motion remained unresolved until September 30th, when Tucci issued his order. Tucci did not grant the defense motion in its entirety. The new evidence, he wrote, forecloses neither a finding of reasonableness nor a finding of unreasonableness in defendants' responses. He noted that NAH's attorneys engaged with the improperly offered evidence rather than seeking to strike or preclude it before the jury heard it, and should have objected immediately during Deasy's testimony rather than retroactively. Sparing nobody from critique, Tucci also acknowledged that he, too, had made an error when he denied a request to give the jury specific instructions regarding the new evidence. Neither party had requested a new trial, but the court has authority to order one sua sponte, a Latin phrase meaning of its own accord, if it deems one necessary. This was the option Tucci chose, declining to grant judgment as a matter of law, but nonetheless finding enough problems with the first trial to warrant a second. On Friday, October 3rd, Deasy's attorneys requested an extension of time to file a motion for reconsideration. Tucci granted an extension on Monday, and that planned motion is due by October 16th. Attorneys for both parties in the case have not responded to requests for comment by the Arizona Daily Sun. And the title of that article was called Judge Orders New Trial of NAH Lawsuit, and it was written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. So now we're going to move along and read our third front page story. This story is titled MNA to Show Creepy Collections by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. The Museum of Northern Arizona, MNA, will be showcasing some of the Halloween-adjacent items in its collections during a new event. Spooky Science and Freaky Finds will run from 1 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, October 11th. Attending the event is included in the admission price. It's designed for all ages and features items that are not scary, just a little spooky, according to MNA Collections Manager Signe Valentinson. Valentinson added that the program also includes information adults would find interesting. The event website notes that costumes are welcome. The idea to introduce people to some items in the museum's collections that aren't seen by the public regularly. The event is designed to be engaging as well as informative and is tied to the Halloween season, featuring taxidermy, frogs in jars, pinned insects from the invertebrate collection, and more. I think it's going to be really fun and exciting, even for folks that might not typically love coming to museums, Valentinson said. Museum employees will staff a haunted laboratory set up in Branagar Hall, where they will explain how some of the items on display came into the collection and how they are used for research. Valentinson said the museum staff has been working to develop this event, including education manager Sasha Siskonen, membership and programs manager Sarah Downing, and programs coordinator Maclovia Corrales. Christina Burke, a teaching professor from the Department of Anthropology at Northern Arizona University, and some of her students will be discussing gnaw marks on bones, and Neil Cobb from the Biodiversity Outreach Network will present using live bugs. The Meteor Crater Education Alliance will bring its inflatable planetarium, decorated with aliens, for the occasion. There will also be stations to learn about nighttime pollinators and poisonous plants and venomous bugs, including accompanying specimens of bats, moths, and plants from the herbarium, in addition to a display of skulls and bones that visitors can touch. I want to share a little bit about the collections that I love with people who might not even be aware that they exist, Valentinson said. We collect a lot more than just what you see in exhibits, and the purpose of these collections is not just to have things and hold on to them, but they're there because they're useful. Among those uses, she said, are our museum exhibits, artistic inspiration, and ways for researchers and others to learn about the history and ecology of the Colorado Plateau. One example included in the Spooky Science event is study skins, a type of taxidermy used to study the details of ecosystems, including those in the past. MNA has been collecting various types of zoology specimens since its founding in 1928. According to Valentinson, the museum has more than 300,000 insects in its invertebrate collection. It's a really wonderful way to reconstruct past environments, looking at what was collected in the past, she said. There's this funny thing where if you're from outside of the museum world or you're outside of the biology world, it can be crazy. It can seem crazy that I have drawers and drawers full of dead mice, but they have this really exciting research potential. More about MNA's Spooky Science and Freaky Finds program can be found at musnaz.org/event/spooky-science-and-freaky-finds. And that article was called MNA to Show Creepy Collections by Abigail Kessler. And now we'll move on to our fourth front page article today. This one is titled Family-Owned Chocolate Business Expands to Flagstaff from the Grand Canyon. And this was written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. About 5 years after initially setting up shop near the Grand Canyon, Tyler Stickler and his family expanded their chocolate business back near their home. Grand Canyon Chocolate opened along State Route 64, just a few miles south of the Grand Canyon's south rim. in 2020 and recently added a second location in downtown Flagstaff. Located less than a mile from where they attended high school, Flagstaff High School graduates Tyler and Connor Stickler are now hard at work preparing a wide variety of sweets, including caramel apples, fudge, chocolate-covered strawberries, and chocolate-covered pretzels across the street from Heritage Square. One of the big reasons we wanted one in Flagstaff is, of course, we're both born and raised Flagstaff locals. We've had our shop up in the Grand Canyon. It's an hour drive each way from our house. That started to wear on us for sure. With Connor currently a full-time student at Northern Arizona University, and the shop in Tucson in position to be run effectively without a member of the family present daily, an expansion to Flagstaff felt like a natural move. Since he's here full-time, we can have a space here, Tyler said. We can still watch the other place and make sure everything's going good. The original inspiration for the business came from the brother's father, Patrick Stickler. Feeling as though the gateway into Grand Canyon National Park offered the potential for a successful business venture, the family landed on a chocolate and candy shop, given the tourism traffic through the area. We've all been up there. We went on childhood field trips and stuff like that, Tyler Stickler said. There was really nothing up there for families or groups heading up there. And we figured candy, ice cream, all that fun stuff when we're on vacation as a family, that's something we looked for. While the business itself seemed like an obvious choice, Tyler admitted they did not know much about baking or the industry as they started out. But they learned on the go. According to Connor Stickler, the business pitch soon led to an attempt at creating some of the treats available in the shop today, with mixed results. That night, we tried to make some candy apples. We melted some chocolate down in the microwave, and it failed horribly, Connor said. Obviously, we've learned a lot since then. There's a science to chocolate. Everyone asks how we get the chocolate to stick and how we get the caramel to stay on the apples. It's all about the temperature. Taking over a location along North LaRue Street near Atria, the Sticklers remodeled the space to assist in the creation of their chocolate and caramel, complete with a massive panoramic photo of the Grand Canyon behind the register, as well as Connor's own photography of some Flagstaff's nature. An added benefit to expanding the business back to where they grew up has been the opportunity to see returning customers, as opposed to some of the national and international tourism that frequented the location up north. After starting a loyalty program within their upgraded systems installed at the Flagstaff location, they received more than 100 signups within the first week. Here in Flagstaff, we were really excited to capture a little bit of the locals and people that want to come back and bring their family in for a dessert night, ice cream, or something like that, Tyler said. We've always talked about how we never get to capture repeat business in the Grand Canyon. Another benefit of the new Flagstaff location? The two get to work together in a much easier way. Our family has always been super close, so I imagined at some point we would be working together at something, Connor said. And our little brother, he's up and coming. I'd imagine we'll have more things in the future. And let's go to the top of this. So the title of this article was called Family-Owned Chocolate Business Expands to Flagstaff from the Grand Canyon. And this was written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. And I just want to remind you that you're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand. From our website, choose Broadcast Info and Audio, and then On Demand. Now we're going to move on to the local in Arizona page, and we have an article here that is called Rewilding Workshop Teaches How to Restore Yards by Calliope J. Ludeker, Sun Staff Reporter. Gardening at 7,000 feet can challenge even a seasoned horticulturist. Although not all plants are adapted to brave the high elevation, a number of them thrive under Flagstaff's harsh sunlight. Often overlooked by growers is northern Arizona's indigenous vegetation. A lot of the issue comes in with folks viewing anything they don't plant as a weed, said Amelia Blake, owner of Lily of the Field Nursery. Blake, a former employee of Native Plant and Seed, opened the nursery with her husband in 2020. The couple envisioned a business focused on growing edible and medicinal plants naturally flourishing in Flagstaff. There wasn't anything around like what we wanted to do, Blake said. We're not trying to become a gigantic nursery. We really want to focus on making it sustainable for our family, as well as providing something useful to the community. We're on track. With a passion for returning spaces to their natural environment, Blake is hosting a rewilding workshop on Saturday, October 11th. A yard dominated by native plants offers several benefits. In addition to having a lower environmental impact, the gardens succeed with minimal intervention, leading to a rewarding result. The plants are also more likely to attract pollinators and wildlife. Next, we're going to read this article from the opinion page. The title is called Vaccines Are One of Humanity's Most Amazing Achievements by Bjorn Lomborg, Tribune News Service. Vaccines are a vital tool that saves millions of lives annually. Concerningly, the U.S. government wants to cut funding for a key organization that saves lives worldwide through immunization. Amid vaccine safety debates, the world is witnessing a rise in measles cases. The politics of the COVID pandemic saw a growing rejection of vaccines, and that shift has contributed to the Trump administration's announcement to cut funding to Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. Gavi is estimated to have saved the lives of 17 million children over the last 25 years. The loss of U.S. support would mean that 75 million children would miss their routine vaccinations in the next 5 years, and more than 1.2 million children could die as a result. The vast number of children dying from infectious diseases today live in poorer countries. Still, we forget that less than two centuries ago, even rich countries lived in an era of pestilence. Back then, infectious diseases caused almost half of annual American and British deaths, whereas today they cause only 3% of all deaths in America. Yet, infectious diseases still kill 3 million children in the world's poorer regions. We need to bring everyone together on uncontroversial, life-saving childhood vaccines, like those for mumps and measles. Not only do governments need to maintain current spending, but they need to increase it. Doing so offers an opportunity to drive significant advances in global development for a minimal investment, something that should be attractive to everyone regardless of their political affiliation. Vaccines are one of the most amazing achievements of humanity. They have saved more lives than any other medical invention and provide population-level control of diseases that once caused untold misery. Vaccines have managed to erase one of humanity's most deadly diseases, smallpox, after it killed indiscriminately for millennia. In the 20th century, it killed 300 million to 500 million people before being finally eradicated in 1977, thanks to the vaccine. If that vaccine didn't exist, this one disease might still kill 5 million people annually. It is estimated that globally, immunization efforts have saved 154 million lives in half a century, or 6 lives per minute of every year. The vast majority, 101 million, were infants. Investing in vaccines, of course, prevents deaths from infectious diseases. By stopping diseases like polio, measles, and tetanus, we also reduce the pressures on healthcare systems in poorer countries, making it possible for them to better assist patients with heart and cancer conditions. Moreover, since infectious diseases know no borders, there is less strain on healthcare systems worldwide. This minimizes economic disruptions and fosters a more secure global environment. Researchers for the Copenhagen Consensus have documented the costs and benefits of maintaining and increasing global investment in vaccinations in research published by Cambridge University Press. If the world continues its current level of spending, we will save 3.8 million lives yearly from avoidable diseases between now and 2030. Each dollar will deliver an absolutely astounding $286 of social benefits from saving lives and avoiding disease. Saving the lives of 3.8 million children yearly with safe, basic vaccinations is an astounding achievement. And saving 500,000 children each year with even higher vaccination coverage is also an incredible opportunity. We should embrace both and ensure that all children are provided with lifelong protection against killer diseases. And that opinion article was called Vaccines Are One of Humanity's Most Amazing Achievements, and it was written by Bjorn Lomborg, Tribune News Service. Now we're going to move along to a page that has some local news briefs. And the first news brief is called Crews Respond to Small Wildfire by C.C. Cragen Reservoir. And these news briefs, by the way, are all written by Daily Sun staff. Hotshot crews from the Coconino National Forest worked to contain a small wildfire south of the C.C. Cragen Reservoir, also known as the Blue Ridge Reservoir, over the weekend. The Houston Fire is located immediately south of the reservoir and roughly 7 miles east of Clint's Well. No structures or communities are threatened, forest officials stated in a press release. And the fire was spreading slowly. Per the Watch Duty app, the fire's size was most recently estimated at 25 acres. Along with the Blue Ridge and Flagstaff hotshots, two engines were assisting in the fire response. Smoke might be visible in the area until the fire is extinguished. No U.S. Forest Service road or trail closures were announced. However, visitors traveling in the vicinity of the fire should use caution. The C.C. Cragen Reservoir boat launch is currently closed due to low water levels, but hand-carried non-motorized watercraft, such as kayaks or paddleboards, still may be used. Our next news brief is titled, 6th Avenue to Close for 1 Month Due to Storm Drain Installation. The City of Flagstaff's progress on the Spruce Wash flood mitigation projects will shift to the construction of the Killip Basin outlet structure beginning on Monday. The Killip Basin outlet structure is a storm drain structure stretching from the Killip School regional detention basins to an existing pipe in Main Street, serving as a secondary outlet for larger storm events and preventing water from overtopping the basins. The work, which will require the closure of 6th Avenue between 1st Street and Main Street, is expected to last a month, depending on the weather. Detour routes will be in place along East Street, 4th Avenue, 3rd Street, and Dortha Avenue to allow access for businesses, schools, and Killip Elementary School within the closure area. Sidewalk access will be maintained throughout the closure area. Motorists are asked to follow the marked detour signage. For questions and additional information, call the project hotline at 928-255-5153 or email info@museumfloodprojects.com. For more information and resources, visit museumfloodprojects.com. And our next news brief is called Foster Farms Corn Dogs Recalled Over Possible Wood Fragments. The Food and Safety Inspection Service, FSIS, of the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced on Saturday, October 4th, that chicken corn dogs produced by Foster Poultry Farms, LLC, are subject to a recall after multiple reports of wood fragments found in the batter. The effective corn dogs were produced between July 30th, 2024, and August 4th, 2025. They have establishment number P-6137B, printed within the mark of inspection or elsewhere on the packaging. Approximately 3.8 million pounds of corn dog products and turkey dog pancake wraps are included in the recall. Foster Farms is one of the country's largest chicken producers, with 10,000 employees and roughly $3 billion in annual revenues. The company's chicken, turkey, and processed poultry products are sold by retailers across the U.S. To date, FSIS has received 5 reports of injuries from consumption of the affected products. The agency said customers should return or throw out any affected products in their refrigerators or freezers. Some of the corn dogs were sold to schools through the commercial market. A full list of affected items and images of the product packaging are available at fsis.usda.gov/recalls. And those were some news briefs for today. Moving on, we'll read our next Arizona-related article. This one is titled, Did House Republicans Stall Adelita Grijalva's Swearing-In to Delay Release of Epstein Files? This was written by Nick Carmia, Cronkite News. Representative-elect Adelita Grijalva arrived at the U.S. Capitol on Tuesday, September 23rd, expecting to be sworn in as the newest member of Congress. Instead, more than a week after winning a special election to succeed her late father, she was left waiting. The Tucson Democrat stood on the House floor during a pro forma session lasting less than 3 minutes, enough time for an opening prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance. Fellow Democrats chanted, "Swear her in." But the Republican presiding over the House gaveled this session to an abrupt end. The oath of office would have to wait. Until when remains unclear. "It's frustrating," Grijalva said afterward. "I'm essentially a tourist with a couple of friends in Congress that have a conference room that they'll lend me." Grijalva's father, Raul Grijalva, died in March during his 12th term in Congress. His daughter, former chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, won the special election in late September by a landslide to serve out his term. House Republicans have not explained the delay, but Democrats suspect it has something to do with the push to release files related to Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein, a wealthy financier and convicted sex offender, died in jail in 2019 awaiting federal trial for trafficking young women and girls for sex. His assistant, Ghislaine Maxwell, is serving a 20-year term for her role in his abuse of minors. Conservatives have demanded release of the full investigative files. President Donald Trump, a former friend of Epstein, has criticized the push for disclosure, calling it a Democratic hoax and encouraging supporters to move on. Speaker Mike Johnson has resisted holding a vote on release of the remaining files. A petition to force such a vote is one signature short, and Grijalva intends to provide that signature. Johnson, aides, and the Office of House Majority Leader Steve Scalise did not respond to repeated inquiries about the timing of Grijalva's swearing in. Until Johnson agrees to administer the oath of office, Grijalva remains in a limbo of sorts, of sorts. Unable to move into her father's old office, hire staff, activate an official web page, or sign the Epstein petition. The first government shutdown in 6 years started 12 hours after Grijalva's brief stop on the House floor. Every day that Speaker Johnson delays is another day Southern Arizonans are left without a voice in Congress and without essential in-district services, Grijalva said in a statement hours after the floor snub. With federal budget negotiations happening now, our community deserves a seat at the table, not partisan obstruction. The Epstein effort is led by a Republican, Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky. Every Democrat has signed, along with Massie and three other Republicans. Representative Greg Stanton, Democrat Phoenix, called the delay unacceptable, accusing the speaker of breaking precedent. Earlier this year, Johnson personally swore in two Florida Republicans within 24 hours of their victories in special elections. Those were also done at brief pro forma sessions, during which the chamber takes no votes and conducts little business. Other Arizona Democrats have also called on Johnson to allow Grijalva to take her seat immediately. Senator Mark Kelly said there is no reason to delay. Senator Ruben Gallego echoed that message. Voters in southern Arizona spoke loudly and clearly when they elected Adelita Grijalva to represent them in Congress. They deserve to have their voices heard in Congress. In Washington, without delay, Representative Yasemin Ansari of Phoenix wrote in a letter to the speaker. And that Arizona-related article was titled, Did House Republicans Stall Adelita Grijalva's Swearing-In to Delay Release of Epstein Files? And that article was written by Nick Carmia, Cronkite News. Next, we're going to move on to some local sports. We have a local roundup. The title under that heading is called Northland Prep Volleyball Posts Two Victories in as Many Days by Sun Sports staff. After splitting their past six regular season matches dating back to September 5th, the number 15 2A Conference Northland Prep Spartans bounced back in a big way on Monday and Tuesday. Taking down the previously undefeated 7th-ranked 2A Round Valley Elks on the road and the number 38 Pinyon Eagles at home, Northland Prep improved to 6-4 overall with a perfect 4-0 record in the North region. Senior Zilla Wildblood Crawford led the Spartans with 22 kills in the four-set victory against the Elks, while junior Mackenzie Parkinson added 14 kills and a team-high 3 total blocks. Northland Prep recorded 13 service aces in the match, with 4 apiece coming from Wildblood Crawford and senior Malia Turner. Junior McKenna Murphy finished the match with 44 assists, and the Spartans hit 254 as a team compared to the Elks' 192 hit average. Northland Prep's busy schedule will continue next week as it hosts the number 43 Hopi Bruins on Tuesday and the St. John's Redskins on Thursday, with both matches beginning at 6 p.m. St. John's only loss This season came in its season opener against Round Valley in a Freedom game back on September 2nd. Wildcats 3, Yetis 2. Looking to snap a two-match skid, number 14 Basis Flagstaff Volleyball dropped a five-set match against the number 30 Mayer Wildcats on the road Tuesday night. The Yetis have just one more non-region match remaining this season, as they begin a stretch of three matches in 4 days on Wednesday. Set to travel to face the number 19 Tuba City Warriors for a 6 p.m. match on Wednesday, Basis Flagstaff will then host the Red Mesa Redskins on Thursday and El Capitan Eagles on Saturday. Flag football, Panthers 31, Titans 0. Coming off back-to-back wins last week, 4A Coconino shut out 4A Arcadia Tuesday at home. The Panthers have allowed just 7 points in their four non-region games combined, with 31 total points allowed in 5 games this season. Meanwhile, the Titans were shut out for the 4th time in 5 games this season and have scored just 9 points this season. Scheduled to play 3 games in 3 days, Coconino was set to face the Peoria Panthers in the Valley on Wednesday before hosting the Mojave Thunderbirds for a region game on Thursday at 3:30 p.m. And you have been, it's all the time we have, so you've been listening to the Arizona Daily Sun. For Sun Sounds of Arizona and Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey. Thanks for listening, and hope you have a great rest of your day.